It's a Saturday morning. You wake up gently, naturally, no alarm clock. You wake up after a deep, dreamless, peaceful sleep. Your mind is calm. Your body is relaxed. Through the window, you see a clear blue sky. You can hear the birds chirping outside. As you lie in bed, you plan your day. You're going to start with a nice breakfast, maybe an egg with a piece of buttered toast, some fruit, cup of coffee. And then maybe you'll go to the farmer's market and pick up some fresh vegetables. And then it's time for a light lunch with some friends, maybe at the Sunflower, sitting out on the porch, right? Have you had mornings like that?
I have.
Now let's take another scenario. It's 10 o'clock on Thursday night. You've put out the light. You want to go to sleep. But you can't. See, earlier today, you had a hurtful conversation with someone you care deeply about. And you're wishing that you had handled it better. Or perhaps tomorrow morning you're not looking forward to a potentially unpleasant interview with your boss. And the "I wish" and the "what if" is keeping you awake. You toss and turn, your mind racing from thought to thought to thought. Have you had nights like that?
I have.
What is happiness? Happiness is that Saturday morning feeling that I described just a few minutes ago. A feeling that life is as... Can you still hear me? A feeling that life is as it should be. A feeling that experience is matching expectation. That's it. A happy mind is a calm mind, a serene mind, a mind that looks outwards, ready to engage joyfully with life. An unhappy mind is a turbulent mind, spinning in circles, coming back to the same thought over and over and over again, wishing and hoping and regretting. A distracted, unproductive mind. A mind that looks inwards. A mind that is unwilling and unable to engage with the outside world. A mind that cannot focus. A mind that is not centered. A calm mind is a happy mind. A turbulent mind is an unhappy mind. Think of life as a horse-drawn cart that moves relentlessly forward day after day after day. Some days the road is rough, full of bumps and potholes. On the other days, it wends its way through lush green hills and valleys, past a gently flowing stream, the scent of flowers wafting in the air. An unhappy mind is like a piece of gum stuck to the edge of one of the wheels of the cart of life. The cart goes forward down the road in a straight line. But is the gum moving in harmony with the cart? No, the cart's going like this, and the gum is going up and back and down and front and up and back and down and front and up. And see what I mean? Okay. That piece of gum is exhausted from all that running around it's doing. It is too tired to participate in life. It is incapable of joy or contentment. But unstick that piece of gum and put it at the center of the wheel. Now what happens? Now it's moving in a straight line. Now it's in harmony with the cart. Now it is centered. It is still going round and round, right? It is still experiencing the bumps and potholes of life, but now it's calm. It's going in a straight line. Now it has time to look around and enjoy life. How do we move our personal pieces of gum to the center of the wheel? How do we open ourselves up to happiness and keep unhappiness at arm's length? I think the first step to understanding happiness is to understand that happiness is not the same as pleasure. Does anyone want to tell me the difference? No? Pleasure lasts as long as the pleasurable activity lasts and then quickly fades away. Happiness gets much deeper into your psyche and lasts for a long time. You know, there was a box of donuts out in the kitchen this morning, right? You know, eating a donut gives me pleasure. But once the donut is gone, that's the end of the pleasure. But as a person who has to constantly watch his weight, okay, eating that donut might give me pleasure. But if I resist the donut, what happens? Which is what I did this morning. You know, I've denied myself a couple of minutes of pleasure. But as I walk away from the donut, I am happy because I did the right thing. I won that battle. Right? And that happiness from walking away lasts much longer than the few minutes of pleasure that I forfeited. Right? Not only is happiness not the same as pleasure, but excessively chasing pleasure can take away from happiness because it produces guilt. Right? So when confronted by temptation, I have to keep reminding myself to choose happiness over pleasure. In the same way, unhappiness is not the same as sadness. Sadness is a response to a loss. Who was the lady whose son passed away who was up here? Yeah. Sadness is the response to a loss. Loss of a loved one. Loss of health. Loss of a relationship. Sadness is accompanied by grief. And grieving is a normal part of the human existence. You cannot push away grief. Grief takes its own time. Unhappiness, I think, is not the same as grieving a loss. Unhappiness often is a response to regret or fear. Regret over past events. Why did I say that? What was I thinking? Why does he act like that? Why did I have that second donut? You know, right? And fear about the future. I'm scared that that medical test will come out badly. I fear that I might not get that promotion. I'm scared that my kid will get into trouble again. We've been there. Sadness, I think, is a state of being. There's no escaping sadness. There is no escaping sadness. Unhappiness, I think, is a state of mind. There's a difference. We can do something about unhappiness. We can move that gum to the center of the wheel. So what life situations and what mindsets cause unhappiness? I'm sure you all can give me a long list of the instigators of unhappiness. But I believe that there are three big ones that we can intentionally do something about. The first and perhaps the most important instigator of unhappiness is what? Loneliness. Loneliness. Being alone. With no one to share its worries with, the mind turns on itself. And every small misgiving becomes a major disaster, right? You brood. A lonely, unhappy mind is trapped in its own ego. It keeps saying, why me? The cure for loneliness, of course, is not to be lonely, to be part of a community, to be part of a group of people joined either by marriage and DNA, which is called a family, or by shared life experiences, like my friend Margaret and I, we've had lunch together many a time, or by shared beliefs. You have a covenant. It's called a congregation. Community is more than just a bunch of people that you hang out with. Community implies connection and an expectation of support. For me to be a member of a community is to know in my heart that there are people around me who care about me and to whom I can turn in my hour of need. But that's only half the answer. I believe that truly being part of a community also means having people around me that I care about. People who know in their hearts that they can turn to me in their hour of need. That completes the circle. So if you have people around you who know that they can count on you, you have community. Community means being able to unhesitatingly asking for support when you need it and stepping up to give support to others when they need it, whether it's convenient for you or not at that time to do so. See, that's the important part. As the father of one of our friends once said, you have to help others when they need it, not when it's convenient for you. The availability of unquestioning give and take is a powerful shock absorber against the bumps and potholes of life. It helps keep the gum centered. It is a buffer against unhappiness. The second big instigator of unhappiness is a lack of self-worth, a lack of self-confidence. I'm good for nothing. This kind of mindset leads to a perceived dependence on the goodwill of others and the need to work overly hard to foster that goodwill. Every conversation is analyzed in the mind over and over again. Did I say something wrong? Tasks are approached with apprehension. I know I'm going to fail. A lack of self-worth also leads to a tendency to blame others for one's own deficiencies. And believe me, we all have deficiencies. Yeah, even me. Yeah. You know, the best way to increase self-worth is by achievement. They can be big achievements, right? Getting a promotion, exceeding a sales goal, helping send a rocket to the moon, My congregation is full of rocket scientists up in Clear Lake. Okay? But small achievements are just as important. Teaching a child how to ride a bicycle. Learning how to bake bread. Ask my wife, I'm a baker. When I bring out a good loaf, it makes me happy. It makes her happy too. If she's happy, I'm happy. Successfully completing a New Year's resolution. The important thing is to be able to say, I did it. But achievements don't come by every day. There is another avenue for increasing self-worth that is available to each of us all the time. And that is to do something nice for another person, expecting nothing in return. That person could be someone you love, or a friend, or a co-worker, or even someone you don't know at all. Have you ever paid the toll for the car behind you at the toll booth? It happened to me. I was the car behind. Believe me, it made my day. It was in Washington, D.C. of all places. Don't expect a reward. Don't even expect gratitude. Your reward is see, the moment you get a reward, you're done. That's not the way it works. But if you don't expect a reward, you will get one. And that reward is an innate increase in self-worth, a sense of satisfaction that comes from deep within, from knowing that you did the right thing. Right? And the more hands-on the activity, the greater is the reward. Writing a check for disaster relief is important and necessary. You know, but it's not quite the same as pulling cans of food out of your pantry and taking them to the homeless shelter. Or helping build a house for Habitat of Humanity, pounding the nails in with your own hand. That's much more personal. But do what you can. It's all good. And it all builds self-worth. Be good to others. Finally, the third big cause of unhappiness of a turbulent mind is brooding over a future event. A fear that some longed-for outcome will come out badly. There's also the temptation to control that outcome, even though we often don't have control over events. You know, I can turn in the best college application, but if I get in or not depends on who else is applying. All I can do is to do my best, and I should, and then walk away and let the chips fall where they may. But so often we fall into the trap of trying to control the twists and turns of life. And my wife will tell you, I fall into that trap often. Okay? Hoping for a particular outcome also assumes that you know that your desired outcome will actually be desired. It often is not. Life is just a chain of events, and like chapters in a book, each chapter is influenced by what came before and is going to affect what happens afterwards. And the chain goes on. There's link after link after link. Not uncommonly, the actual significance of an event does not become evident until weeks, months, or even years have gone by. What seems terrible at first may turn out to be a blessing in disguise. Many of you have heard the story of that Chinese farmer, right? Who had a small piece of land, and he had a son that helped him till the land, and a horse that took his produce to the market. One day the horse runs away into the jungle, and the neighbor comes over and says, "Man, you lost that horse. How are you going to take your crops to the market? You're going to starve." And the farmer smiles and says, "Well, let's see what happens next." And a week later, the horse comes by bringing two wild horses with him.
And
now he has three horses, and the neighbor comes and says, "Man, you are the luckiest, you are the richest man in the village. How good for you." And the farmer smiles and says, "Well, let's see what happens next." And next week his son is trying to train one of the wild horses, and the horse throws him, and the son breaks his leg. And the neighbor comes over and says, "Man, who's going to help you till that field, you poor, poor man?" And the farmer says, "Let's see what happens next." And next week, the king's soldiers come by looking for conscripts for the king's army, and they round up every young, able-bodied man in the village and march him off, except the farmer's son. He had a broken leg. You see? You don't know. The ability to say, "What happens? Let's see what happens next," is a powerful defense against regret and unhappiness. It doesn't come easy. And the angst of brooding on the future can consume all happiness. But we don't really know what the actual outcome will be until much later. 2 decades ago, I was devastated from the loss of my younger sister from cancer. I mean, she was only 36 when she got ill. My quest to come to terms with her death and my search for support, I needed support. My search for support led me to the Bay Area Unitarian Universalist Church. And my quest for answers changed me forever. And I think a little bit for the better. Okay? So you don't know. Sometimes we just have to sit back and be at peace with whatever life throws at us. In the words of Paul McCartney, right? "When I find myself in time of trouble, Mother Mary comes to me, speaking words of wisdom, let it be." And Mother Mary here is not a biblical reference. Paul is talking about his own Mother Mary, who was an obstetrical nurse, and she died when he was 14. And she came to him in a dream. "And in my hour of darkness," wrote Paul, "she is standing right in front of me, speaking words of wisdom. Let it be. Let it be. Let it be." So, building community, that's you. And you may have other communities. But remember, for some people in this room, this is the only community. We UUs tend to be, I'm going off script now, but we tend to be a little bit strange. Right? We are different. We are not interested in the chatter of everyday life, as many people are. And so many of us may have lots of acquaintances, but not that many friends, because we are different. I know. It takes one to know one. Okay? And so for many of you, this may be the, or not many, but some of you, this may be the only community, and the rest of you always remember that. You know? So building community, helping others altruistically, expecting nothing in return, and consciously recognizing that even seemingly terrible events may lead to unexpected and positive consequences. Okay? When my sister died, I'm off script again, but you guys are friends, and we'll be 2 minutes late, but that's okay. When my sister died, one of the answers, you know, I was saying, why? And then I said to myself, if there is a heaven, well, I don't know, but if there is one, and if she's up there looking down at me, I should do something that makes her say, my death was good for someone. And that's what changed my life. Okay? So, you know, even things that seem terrible they may have positive consequences. Now, these things I've been talking about indirectly calm the thoughts. And a calm mind is a happy mind. But there's also a practice I want to mention briefly that directly builds happiness by collecting our scattered thoughts and gently coaxing them to shut up and sit down. That practice, of course, is called meditation. Okay? Now, all forms of meditation, breath meditation, walking a labyrinth, chanting, they all have the same goal, to still the mind. If you often find yourself worried and happy, you know, and stressed, Consider meditation. When we meditate, we open a door between our everyday life, which is full of stress and worry and hurly and burly and all, you know. We open that door and we walk into a different world. A world that is full of calmness, peace, tranquility. A regular meditative practice is like going to Mexico on vacation, year after year after year. Each time you come back, you will bring a piece of Mexico with you, a few words of Spanish, a recipe, a wall hanging. After 10 years of doing this, a visitor to your house, someone who doesn't know you, comes to your house and says, "Oh, it looks like you go to Mexico often." It is the same with meditation. Each time you step through the door into the world of calm, and then when you walk back, you bring some of that calmness back with you. And a regular meditative practice can change your personality by slowing the mind. That's what meditation does. Okay? Every word, every action becomes just a little more thoughtful, a little more deliberate, so that one is less likely to say or do something that causes regret. Meditation also softens the ego and opens one up to connecting with others. It leads to an intuitive awareness that we are all part of the same existence. By doing so, meditation opens one up to compassion, to caring. And these are fertile grounds for happiness for the giver. So building community, doing good for others, accepting the future are simple but powerful tools for building happiness. A happy person learns from the past but does not regret it. Is aware of the future but does not dread it. She lives in the present. She takes life day by day. So there you have it. What's happiness is just a piece of gum, you know? And each of us has the power to decide where our personal piece of gum lies on that wheel. Whether it lies out near the edge or stuck firmly to the middle, to the center. So the next time you meet a friend, instead of asking how you're doing today, perhaps you should ask, where have you decided to stick your gum today? Thank you.